The world can accommodate human population growth indefinitely. The more people, the better, because more people mean more inventions and ultimately more wealth. The statement about our ability to absorb current rates of population growth indefinitely is not to be taken seriously, because that would need 10 people per square yard in the year 2779. Data on national wealth demonstrate that the claim that more people mean more wealth is the opposite of correct. The 10 countries with the most people are, in descending order of population, China, India, the U.S., Indonesia, Brazil, Pakistan, Russia, Japan, Bangladesh, and Nigeria. The 10 countries with the highest affluence, above $20,000 per capita, are, in descending order, Switzerland, Luxembourg, Finland, Japan, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Iceland, Canada, and Nauru. The only country on both lists is Japan. Actually, the countries with large populations are disproportionately poor. 8 of the 10 have per capita GNP under $10,000, and 6 of them under $600. The affluent countries have disproportionately few people. 8 of the 10 have populations below 9 million, and 3 of them under 500,000. Instead, what does distinguish the two lists is population growth rates. All 10 of the affluent countries have very low relative population growth rates. Thus, as an empirical fact, more people and a higher population growth rate mean more poverty, not more wealth. Environmental concerns are a luxury affordable just by affluent first world yuppies who have no business telling desperate third world citizens what they should be doing. This view is one that I have heard mainly from affluent first world yuppies lacking experience of the third world. In all my experience of Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, East Africa, Peru, and other third world countries with growing environmental problems and populations, I have been impressed that their people know very well how they are being harmed by population growth, deforestation, overfishing, and other problems. They know it because they immediately pay the penalty in forms such as loss of free timber for their houses, massive soil erosion, and their inability to afford clothes, books, and school fees for their children. The reason why the forest behind their village is nevertheless being logged is usually either that a corrupt government has ordered it logged over their often violent protest, or else that they signed a logging lease with great reluctance because they saw no other way to get the money needed next year for their children. Another view that is widespread among affluent first world people, but which they will rarely express openly, is that they themselves are managing just fine, despite all those environmental problems, which really don't concern them because the problems fall mainly on third world people. Actually, the rich are not immune to environmental problems. CEOs of big first world companies eat food, drink water, breathe air, and have, or try to conceive, children, like the rest of us. While they can usually avoid problems of water quality by drinking bottled water, they find it much more difficult to avoid being exposed to the same problems of food and air quality as the rest of us. In addition, one of the conclusions that we saw emerging from our discussion of Maya kings, Greenland Norse chieftains, and Easter Island chiefs is that, in the long run, rich people do not secure their own interests and those of their children if they rule over a collapsing society, and merely buy themselves the privilege of being the last to starve or die. As for first world society as a whole, our totally unsustainable consumption means that the first world could not continue for long on its present course, even if the third world weren't trying to catch up to us.